Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Welcome to Sunday School Dropouts, the podcast where an ex-Christian and a non-believing sort of Jew read all the way through the Bible for the first time. I'm Lauren O'Neill.
And I'm Nico Bakulich.
And let's get biblical.
Okay.
First, we got to give you a couple little tidbits of info, such as, I'm the ex-Christian. I was raised Presbyterian. I taught Sunday school. I sang in the worship band. I am now an atheist.
And I'm the non-believing sort of Jew. Also, this is not a Christian Bible study podcast.
And it's not appropriate for children because we cuss a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I'm reading the New International Version of the Bible.
And I'm reading the New Revised Standard Version of Bible.
Is there anything else the people need to know?
There's one more thing, which is that we have a very special guest today.
Yes. So with us in the studio is Dr. Christopher Stroop, a.k.a. Chris, a.k.a. Stroopy, which is what we call him in this household.
Mm-hmm.
And
as we discussed on a previous episode, once a nickname is given, it cannot be taken
back. Yeah, that's why Patricia Lockwood, the foremost poet of our generation, is TT in this household.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't NAM, you know, there are rules.
I totally get that reference, and I've seen all the good movies. Chris, would you care to explain yourself?
Well,
who are you and why are you here?
What is a Chris, really?
I didn't know you were going to get so cosmological about it. I am a writer and a scholar. I have a PhD in Russian history from Stanford University. I also grew up in the Christian right, so pretty hardline evangelical Christian school kid. I was on the Judges episode of Sunday School Dropouts.
Yes, as you were.
Some listeners may recall, I talked a little bit about how we read that book in my sophomore Bible class in high school with a very memorable teacher. You can find my work at chrisstroop.com. My blog there is called Not Your Mission Field. I've also written quite a bit for Religion Dispatches. Some of my stuff's been picked up by Salon and Alternet. And you can find me on Twitter at @C_Stroop.
We're not at the plugs yet, Chris.
Oops.
Get out of this
Sorry,
studio.
I totally fucked it up.
Yeah. So Chris is a writer and a teacher.
And longtime friend of the show.
Oh. And longtime friend of the show.
Yeah, I do currently teach at the University of South Florida. Had a postdoc there for the last 2 years. Now I'm in a visiting instructor position in the Honors College. So that would be in Tampa, one of America's okayest cities, I would say.
There you have it.
An original college boy here.
And today we're talking about the book of Philippians.
As little as we possibly can.
It's a short book. There's not a lot in it. But we'll definitely talk about it at some point. Chris, we have had you on the show once before on the Judges episode. And I know you you explained a bit about your religious background there, and you've just given us a little bit right now. But would you care to go into a little more detail?
Sure. So I grew up in a number of different denominations, but they were all very conservative. So the first churches that we attended when I was a small kid were Baptist, and then we attended a Wesleyan church, then an independent Christian church, and then ultimately we kind of got involved with that whole megachurch-inspired non-denominational movement. You know, same shitty theology, but you make it relevant. And church is a rock show, and you call the bulletin a program, and you call the sermon a message, and you use phrases like seeker-sensitive and not your grandma's church. So we didn't care that much about denominational.
That's just like all churches in California, by the way.
Good to know.
You're like, what you're describing, I'm like, yeah, that's a normal church.
I'm fascinated by the idea of Wesleyan church, though. I assume it's small, liberal, it's the focus on the...
Everybody majors in English.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. Wesleyan churches come out of the holiness tradition. It's John Wesley. It's the, you know, the Methodism has roots in the same tradition. But these holiness churches that have come out of that Methodist tradition are more hardline than, say, United Methodists. So another one is the Church of the Nazarene, for example.
Yeah, we're very familiar with that one.
So generally, they believe in free will, if you want to talk about doctrine. They're not Calvinists, but they're really hardline in terms of the rules that they follow.
Got it. I was just fishing for a cheap joke, but, you know, that's good info.
Thank you for giving us actual knowledge.
So I'd say that, you know, questions of free will versus predestination and that kind of stuff were not really that important to my family. But taking the Bible as inerrant, as basically literal, was, and what the focus tends to be in these kinds of Christian groups would be then on right-wing politics and culture wars, you know? So you really focus on those parts of the Bible that you use to try to justify opposition to abortion and LGBT rights. So it's like, all right, God leaves some things kind of obscure when it comes to the theology, guys, but we can make church a rock show and we can, like, all oppose gay rights together.
It's interesting. I mean, the Bible is definitely against gay rights, but that's not a very big part of it.
Well, I would say it's a very tiny part of it.
And you can even make an argument that it's not really, because these could be temple prostitutes or people in exploitative situations.
Right. Does the Bible ever say anything about abortion explicitly?
Explicitly, no, but there is...
I know there's rules in the Torah about if, like, you cause a woman to miscarry.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But
there's a penalty for that, but it's not the same as the penalty for killing an adult.
That's right.
Right.
Someone who's already born.
Right. Which, it seems like it's weird that to take something that actually isn't even mentioned in the Bible and make that the main thing.
It is
of
weird.
Your church.
It's historically weird, too, because for, conservative Protestants, this is historically new.
Right. It used to be Catholics were against abortion, but Protestants mm-hmm. were against abortion after the quickening, right? That's the traditional cutoff point.
I guess so, yeah. But, I mean, they did not really obsess about abortion in general until the 1970s and even more so in the 80s. It kind of happened...
Oh, what a decade.
It kind of happened when it was becoming uncomfortable for them to explicitly oppose the civil rights movement.
They needed a new issue.
They did.
When it's uncomfortable to oppose civil rights.
I would argue that abortion functions for them basically as a kind of defensive fetish in Lacanian terms. And as I commented earlier, I am kind of sweating like Slavoj Žižek right now. So, like, this new deodorant, is that the antiperspirant part's not working. But sorry, that's too much information. But
we don't say the perspirant word. And of course, I'm talking about Slavoj Žižek.
Yes, well, you know,
I guess that's more the Z word.
Žižek engages in this kind of popular Lacanian analysis, right? So let's talk about white evangelicals who want to be respectable, middle class and up or whatever. They have a college degree, but they don't want to believe certain things that are demonstrable. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
They have their Christian alternative facts, right? So they'll try to show that they're sort of nice or moderate or thinking about things like, well, I have a gay friend, but I can't vote for Democrats because of abortion, right? So it's always that, but abortion, because abortion.
Yeah.
It functions as a fetish that keeps them from having to actually examine themselves in a serious, critical way.
I definitely saw on Facebook during the election season a lot of people, a lot of Christians on your comment sections too, who would say like, "Well, I hate Trump, but abortion, mm-hmm. so I got to vote for him."
Yeah, and that way they try to get off the hook for continuing to support white supremacy. I mean, as you also know, they basically disavow any kind of culpability in anything systemic. Like, they refuse to reason systemically about anything.
Yes.
Except for original sin. What are you going to do?
Now, you have read the Bible all the way through, correct?
Yes, I did read the Bible all the way through when I was about 16 years old. That's the only time I read it straight through, cover to cover. I think it took me about a year, maybe a little less. I read it in the NIV at that time.
Hell yeah. I mean, not really.
I mean, you know, that's what evangelicals do. But when I go back and I read the Bible, parts of the Bible for various purposes now, for example, this podcast, I tend to read the New Revised Standard Version.
That's Nico's. I thought you were going to
Should I be excited?
Yeah, that's your team.
I didn't invent it. Well, I don't get royalties. I don't get those sweet zits.
People who read the NRSV are a grand faloon anyway. So.
I don't know what that means.
That's a Kurt Vonnegut reference.
Oh, okay.
So you're both a Hoosier and an NRSV. Hoosier is, of course, the original Grand Falloon.
Indeed.
And what are your Bible thoughts in general?
Nice one.
What's your opinion of the Bible?
Terry Gross over here.
This is how Terry Gross sounds when she has also had several glasses of wine.
Lauren and I are drinking a rosé, yeah. But I just like to say that we're pretty much being basic white girls tonight.
That's extremely insulting. Rosé is the drink of queens. And Nico is drinking beer.
Mm-hmm.
Boo.
Yeah, I'll join the anti-beer team.
Tell us about your Bible thoughts.
Right.
If I remember correctly, reading the Bible straight through at age 16 sort of precipitated a crisis of faith for you.
That's exactly right. It did precipitate a crisis of faith that dragged on for approximately 20 years. And, you know, back when I was in grad school here in California at Stanford, I used to tell people that my hobby was having existential crises.
I used to say that my hobby was wrestling with God.
So
when, you know, I was having my own crisis of faith.
As the Russians say, in every joke, there is a grain of joke.
That's a good one. Good job, Russia.
Right. So... I couldn't kind of make it hold together in the way it was supposed to. We were taught that there were no errors in the Bible, at least in the original manuscripts. That also meant that it had to be entirely coherent and non-contradictory. So at that time, I started to have these serious doubts, some about more profound things, you know, theology seeming to be contradictory, some about things like, you know, justification of genocide in the Old Testament.
You know, the little things.
Sometimes it would just be like, well, wait, but in Chronicles, they gave like this number of troops that did whatever. Mm. And in Kings, they gave a different number. So I went to talk to this pastor about it. He lived in our neighborhood. He was the pastor of our church at that time. He eventually taught Bible at our Christian school as well. And he seemed to be kind of understanding at first that, okay, people have doubts. And he gave me some apologetics book to read. Apologetics being basically like the intellectual defense of the faith. And
right.
I use the term intellectual loosely.
Well, when we hear the word apologetics or apologia, it sounds like it's apologizing.
Sounds like they're already starting on the wrong foot.
Yeah, but that's
in my
not
opinion.
That's not really what it means. Like, it's from the Greek.
Ooh,
like,
are we going to the etymology corner?
Great, great men don't apologize. Just look at our president.
Let's not. Let's block him out of our minds forever. Yeah, for anyone who's not familiar with that term, it sounds like it's apologizing and admitting that there's like this big problem, but that's not what it means.
Right. In the original Greek, I guess it means defense. As I said, I use the word intellectual loosely here because sometimes for an evangelical apologetics, it's really ridiculous. Sometimes it's really on the level of like, look at how perfectly shaped bananas are for human consumption.
Yes, an atheist nightmare! I always call bananas an atheist nightmare, and nobody ever understands what I'm talking about, and they think I'm crazy.
And you know what's funny about that? Is that, I mean, you know, like, pretty much probably every American you know peels a banana from the little, like, tabby part.
From the wrong side, yeah.
Well, I mean, in so many other countries, for example, Russia, like, most people peel bananas from the other side.
That's how chimps do it,
That's
too.
How chimps do it.
And they use the tab, what I like to call the tab, because it's like opening a pop can, except it's a banana. you know.
But they use the tab as like a popsicle stick.
I just said pop. I should say soda now. I'm supposed to be like all sophisticated and not really. Okay.
No, pop is very folksy and cute. It gives you like a down-home charm.
I am, you know, I'm always going to be from Indiana. So
I'm so sorry.
So yeah, they use it as a handle. It can be a tab or a handle. So like, if this is so obvious that like we should believe in God because of it, why do chimps do it in a different way from Americans?
And that's how out of touch we are with our roots.
Yeah.
In America.
It's true.
That's how privileged we are that we can peel bananas the wrong way.
Everybody can afford to peel the banana the wrong way in America, and the streets are paved with cheese.
That's right.
Or banana peels.
Or banana peels.
So the Bible and apologetics.
So the Bible.
So this apologetics book, it wasn't one of the famous ones. I mean, if you're from these evangelical or ex-evangelical circles, like you will have heard of
C.S. Lewis.
He's an older generation, but everybody reads him. He's like one of the intellectual founding fathers for this kind of Christianity.
That was the little lion guy, right?
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Yeah. Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. Yeah, he could write some decent children's books. I liked them.
I liked them too. I liked them because they were Christian when I was a kid. I was like, this lion, that's definitely Jesus. And that rules.
He was always like, it's totally not an allegory.
Put him on the board,
you guys. But it totally was.
But it totally was. Yeah. I could understand that as like an 8-year-old.
So it wasn't C.S. Lewis, wasn't Lee Strobel, wasn't Josh McDowell. So I don't even remember what it was, but it was in a question and answer format. And so I read this apologetics book, and then I like went back and I talked to him a week or two later, and I was like, you know, these answers just like they weren't really that satisfactory to me. I still have doubts. And then the problem became about me. So all of a sudden it's like he said, you must be harboring some sin in your life.
Yeah, must be.
You are probably opening yourself up to demonic influences. This pastor really, he believed he had seen a demon at least once. Like his family spends Halloween praying against demons. Like they believe demonic activity is very, very real. So did everyone I grew up with.
That's so crazy. That's like, that was so not a part of my Christian upbringing, you know?
You're missing out.
I mean, it might have been kind of cool.
You missed out on, I guess, those like totally awesome fall festivals that they have at Baptist churches instead of Halloween.
Too. Yes, I just had the regular old Halloween festivals, went and won a goldfish. The goldfish lived for 15 years.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Damn.
Its name was Percoles. That's how my little brother pronounced Hercules at the time.
Are you sure that goldfish wasn't a demon?
Honestly, it lived so long that it might have been.
How was your childhood while that fish was alive?
Like, quite bad. Like, very frightening and stressful.
That's all I need to hear. Now it's dead and you're doing well.
That's true. It's... I wonder what happened to... Okay, that fish was in my mom's freezer forever.
Mm-hmm. What?
But my mom just moved.
Do you think it was still in there?
Yes. And
why
I wonder
your
what
mom
happened to
freeze
it.
Freeze the demon fish.
The fish was in the freezer for literally like at least 10 years. I'm
why?
Not even joking. I don't know. I would go over there every single time. I would like open the freezer and be like, the fish is still in here. Percoles is still here.
Was she going to eat him?
Like, I honestly don't know. Mom, please explain.
We'll take our answer off the air.
Please write into the show and explain.
Oh, boy. But so we also were allowed to trick-or-treat on Halloween. So we got to do, like, the fall festivals and the trick-or-treating. So it was, like, extra candy. But we could not wear scary costumes. And we were not allowed to say trick-or-treat because that would be, like, threatening people.
Oh, my, yes.
And that was a sin. So we had to say Happy Halloween.
That's like on Holy Heretics, they talked about how at their Christian school they, like, played volleyball, but they weren't allowed to spike because that wouldn't be Christian.
Is there a whole field of... like sports where the rules are made Christian?
I guess.
What? That makes that so weird.
Like basketball where you can't steal the ball.
Yeah. Stealing is a sin.
You have to call it something like, you know, politely removing.
You can't covet your neighbor's ball.
No, you can totally covet your neighbor's ball. I mean, my Christian high school is like a pretty big one. We had decent sports teams.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They did not.
Despite their inability to steal or tackle.
This was not a thing at my Christian school.
Okay, well, that's good. That's
sure.
Good.
Young Earth creationism was a thing, but changing the rules to sports was not.
So, like, what did you dress up as for Halloween?
Oh, boy.
Demons.
That was totally not enough. I remember one year in early childhood, I was a rabbit. One time I was like kind of this superhero.
Are you sure you weren't some sort of lagomorph? You know what I'm talking about.
You know what I'm talking about.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
That's all right.
That's what a rabbit is. It's a lagomorph.
Good to know. Tiger one time. Yeah, you could be.
So just animals.
I like animals. animals are nice. I mean, some of them try to eat you, but you
like
know.
Tigers and rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
But rabbits don't try to eat you unless they're in Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
And okay, so this pastor, what happened? If you were open to demonic influence,
well, that kind of you know that kind of freaked me out. I mean, I consider this a serious incident of spiritual abuse at this point. I was worried about it. I was also reading too much Paul at that time.
Any Paul
how
is
much
too
is
much
too
Paul.
Much, yeah.
I was having a hard time. I thought that the whole concept of predestination kind of made human life meaningless. But I was having trouble reading Paul, particularly Romans, in any other way. So I was like, what if Calvinism is true and I'm just like part of the reprobate? Or, you know, it was around this time that I also thought I had committed the unpardonable sin that I had blasphemed the Holy Spirit. I had like a palpable lump of anxiety in my chest for a week. I was afraid I was going to hell no matter what I did. And if you're going to hell, like, it doesn't matter. It's like in Faust, you know? It doesn't matter how long
right.
of a time you have on earth. Like, eternity, nothing compares to eternity.
Right.
Mm.
So it was scary.
Just and, like Prince sang, lo, those many years ago.
And I did things like smash an Our Lady Peace CD with a hammer because I thought maybe it was a demonic influence.
Wow.
I was trying to figure out what the demonic influences were, or could
what
be.
What were some other candidates?
This is so embarrassing. Oh my God, this is like.
Please divulge it to our several thousand listeners.
Well, okay, my grandma is dead, so that makes me feel less bad because she won't.
Can rule her out.
Because she won't hear it, because my grandma's troupe had given me like a set of carved faces painted with the masks from like Japanese opera.
Oh,
cool.
And yeah, it was really neat. But then I thought, well, maybe that's pagan and maybe that's demonic. So maybe I have to smash it.
What were Grandma Stroop's beliefs?
Grandma Stroop was very live and let live, open-minded.
Oh, that's nice. Did you smash her nice gift?
I tried to. Didn't smash very well. Oh.
That's how you know craftsmanship.
No, that's how you know it's demons.
Oh, really? Demon craftsmanship.
I didn't have, you know, a basilisk tooth on hand or something like that.
Some other sort of horcrux device.
Yeah, something that can get rid of horcruxes.
So your main approach to getting rid of demonic influence was smashing.
Smashing.
I mean, I only smashed like two things.
Okay.
Mm. Or I tried to.
Okay.
But I did go there for a while, like in the depths
to
of
Smashville.
My, in the depths of my extremist despair, like, you know, I didn't.
It's like the opposite of retail therapy.
Smashville.
Except, like, for completely the wrong reasons. This is all kind of embarrassing to talk about now.
It was well, we appreciate you telling the truth, I assume. Unless you come on here and make a mockery of us and our show by lying to our faces.
No, this is true.
His face is way too sheepish to be lying.
I need another drink of wine.
Let's drink some more rosé. The drink of queens. Okay, so should we talk about Philippians?
Well, we could say, so what... At that particular time in your life, you were reading a lot of Paul. Like, what attracted you about Paul at that time?
You know, we had to read a lot of the Bible for various classes that we took. I don't remember exactly why I was reading through Romans around this time. So, I mean, the timeline is a little bit fuzzy in my head. And maybe from some old journals, maybe I could put it together in a little bit of a more concrete way. All these things were happening around...
We're not going to fact check you, don't worry. Mm-hmm.
All these things were happening around the same time. So it could have been that I was reading Paul on assignment, or it could have just been that... Well, I mean, I was also sometimes just trying to figure things out, right? So I would go back and read certain parts of the Bible that spoke to a certain issue. I mean, I was the kind of morbid kid who really freaked out about questions of, say, free will versus predestination.
I mean, that's a spooky subject no matter your age if you think seriously about it.
That is something that, like, fascinated, like, all of American literature for, mm-hmm. like, decades was about this issue. So it is a compelling one.
We're a morbid people.
American Christians.
Yeah.
I mean, they are. They're obsessed with debt.
They're very afraid of it. Conservative Christians, at least.
With good reason.
We all are. This was actually...
Should we really fear death?
I was just remembering a song that we used to sing in church when I was a kid that one of the lines was, you're not ready to live until you're ready to die. And I remember being a kid and being like, I'm 8 years old, I'm not ready to die. And then I would be like, well, that means I'm not a... That means I don't truly believe in Jesus. That means I'm going to hell. You know?
Yeah, it's just such an abusive system that it socializes you into this mentality that just causes... If you are a sensitive kid, you just completely freak out.
Yeah.
Yeah, we also memorize a lot of verses from Paul. We memorize a lot of verses in general. That's something that conservative Protestants do. But rereading Philippians, I remembered how many of them are from Philippians, because I honestly couldn't remember exactly what was in Philippians, except for Philippians 4:13, that reference stuck in my head. But when I read back through the book, I realized a lot of the verses were in my head. I had just forgotten the references.
So something that I've discovered, I also had to memorize a lot of Bible verses growing up, memorize them in extremely granular ways. Like you would just memorize three sentences and you wouldn't read around it,
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And something that I realize now doing this podcast is that most of what Paul wrote about is circumcision. And then there's a few lines in there about love, and then everybody has to memorize lines about love.
I mean, I don't know about most of what he wrote about. He wrote about a lot of abstract things as well.
Did you have any experience like that of realizing the verses you have to memorize aren't necessarily in context and aren't even necessarily particularly representative of the book?
I mean, I guess so. I heard in a lot of evangelical sermons that we should be reading the Bible in context, and so you don't want to take verses totally out of context. And that contradicts the practice a bit because, in practice, you very much do, right? Certain verses are used all the time as justifications for this or that. And then the context does kind of drop away unless you go a little bit deeper with it. And of course, there are certain verses that are always associated with the so-called plan for salvation, or the Romans road.
Well, I've never heard of either of those things.
Yeah, well, can you explain those?
Of course, there's John 3:16, right? For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son that whosoever believes in him
shall not perish, but shall have eternal life.
Yeah, or everlasting life. So that one, honestly, I memorized as a pretty young child in a Awana program that was at a Baptist church that our friends down the street went to. So that's why I memorized that one in the King James instead of the NIV. But anyway, so that is often used for proselytizing, trying to convert people. But there are also really important verses in Romans that are used to sort of show the kind of Protestant notion of salvation by grace through faith. Romans 3:23, for example, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, is a verse that we got a lot, emphasis on this supposed fact that, no one escapes sin, right? So everyone needs salvation. So, right, in these kind of tracts and stuff, they'll use a lot of verses from Romans to kind of take people through the plan of salvation.
The plan for salvation and the Romans road. Oh, it's all making sense now. I mean, it doesn't make sense. But
relatively.
The names make sense. Path to Salvation and Romans Road sound like the name of secret military operations to me.
I could see that. I'm going to Google Romans Road.
I think they sound like video game subtitles.
Sure.
Like Metal Gear 8, Romans Roads.
Romans Roads, yeah. Path to Salvation.
Yeah, so on gotquestions.org.
My favorite website.
There is a question. It is labeled question, colon, and then in quotation marks. What is the Romans road to salvation? Answer, colon. The Romans road to salvation is a way of explaining the good news of salvation using verses from the book of Romans. It is a simple yet powerful method of explaining why we need salvation, how God provided salvation, how we can receive salvation, and what are the results of salvation? You guys, I totally remembered
there
the
you
first
have it.
One.
Simple, Romans 3. Simple yet powerful.
Romans 3:23 is the first one. You have to say that everybody is a horrible sinner.
That's the main thing. Step one.
And then it's Romans 3:10-18, Romans 6:23, Romans 5:8.
All right. I think we can stop taking steps down the Romans road.
Simple yet powerful, like the Incredible Hulk.
Should we take a break and then, I don't know, come back and maybe discuss the actual book that we read?
Yes. So we're going to take a quick break. You're going to hear some music and we'll be back in about a minute.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Welcome back to Sunday School Dropouts. My name is Nico.
And I'm Lauren.
And we're here. Chris. With...
Stop stepping on my line.
Sorry. My job, damn it. You're on thin ice, mister. Our special guest today is Chris Stroop.
Now you can introduce yourself.
Hi. Sorry I fucked up your podcast again.
And we are talking about the book of Philippians. It's somewhere in the New Testament.
Uh-huh. See if you can find it. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised.
And I'm going to give you some fast facts about it. Number one, it's another Pauline fucking epistle.
Mm-hmm.
It is a letter to the church in Philippi, which is a city in Greece. It probably really was written by Paul, which we'll get into a little more later, while he was in jail. However, he was in jail a bunch of times, so we're not exactly sure which time.
He was such a martyr.
Ugh, and he loved every second of it.
Mm-hmm.
So this could have been, he could have been in Rome, he could have been in Ephesus, he could have even been in Caesarea, we're not sure. It was probably written sometime around 60 AD or thereabouts. And as we saw in a previous epistle, I can't remember which one it was. Timothy is like maybe like kind of a co-author here. It's kind of like addressed. It's signed like from Paul and Timothy.
Mm-hmm.
But where it's kind of ambiguous about like to what degree he played a role. I definitely see Paul's voice here. I don't really know how much Timothy was involved, if at all.
Yeah, I mean, I never really thought about Timothy possibly being involved in this when we read it in school. You know, it's just like, I guess Timothy was with him.
Yeah.
So he's, you know, from Paul and Timothy at the beginning.
That's what it seems like to me.
That's where the Christmas card is, from Paul and Timothy.
pretty much,
best
yeah.
Best wishes.
But like, obviously, Grace Paul did all the work. It's like the husband never does anything about the Christmas cards, right? Like the wife does all of it. She books the photographer.
He puts the money. Wait, he puts the money on the table.
Are you saying Paul is Timothy's wife?
Obviously. Otherwise, he wouldn't be so fucking insecure about husbands and wives. So chapter one starts with the standard greeting about how Christianity rocks and like paganism drools or whatever.
Yeah. Shout outs to all my saints out
and
there.
And he's like,
couldn't have done without God.
He's like, yes, I am in jail right now, but don't worry. I won't shut up about Jesus, and everyone here is very sick of me already. Don't worry.
And I might die, but I might not die. It's all going
to
be fine.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm not afraid to die because I want to hang out with the big man.
Mm-hmm.
But it would also be cool to like keep living so that I could keep bugging everyone about Jesus.
It would be more useful for you if I stay alive.
So it's like, you
know, God's going to like keep
tough
me alive.
He calls on the Philippians to imitate Christ by being very selfless and humble. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but consider others better than yourselves. He promises to send Timothy to visit Philippi.
Mm-hmm. That's like the ultimate reward, is to meet Timothy.
It's weird, right? He's always promising to send Timothy to these places, but I don't know if it's a reward because he's usually writing an epistle to like scold a church or like try to get them to be more obedient. So I kind of feel like he's like
threatening to send Timothy.
Yeah. You know, it's like the branch manager is coming over, you know.
Philippians
whatever.
Is kind of an exception in that sense, though, isn't it?
That's
because
true.
He seems like pretty happy with them, except he's like, well, there's this one dispute that he mentions at one point. He's like, you guys should get these ladies to get along.
Yeah.
But, you know.
He also implies that he needs money at the end of it. But we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there.
He totally does, but he doesn't. Because he can be content in all circumstances.
That's how Paul always talks about
money. He is such a manipulator. I even wrote in my notes, like, it gets just like a little prosperity gospelish toward the end.
He's always just a little, he's still just walking that line.
But, you know, the prosperity gospel is worse. I mean, Paul didn't actually say, like, God has chosen to give me a private jet.
Yeah, Paul did not. He's no subscribe Benny, to Joel Osteen's he's no Benny podcast.
Hinn. Yeah.
He also says he's going to send another guy named Epaphroditus.
Mm-hmm. Great name.
Sounds a little like a medical condition, which is appropriate because apparently Epaphroditus was very ill and they thought he was going to die, but
he didn't. Great story.
He got better and now he's cool to go visit Philippi. In chapter 3, we know this is definitely Paul writing because here's the requisite freak out about circumcision.
This one is the one of the more straightforward freak outs he has.
Yeah, it is.
He pretty much lays it all on a table.
He says, watch out for those dogs, those men who do evil, those mutilators of the flesh.
Mm.
For it is we who are the circumcision, we who worship by the Spirit of God, who glory in Christ Jesus, and who put no confidence in the flesh. Basically meaning, well, people who are circumcised are confident that God will save them because of that. When really,
it's all about the spiritual foreskin.
It's all about the spiritual foreskin.
And he even goes on to say, I'm embarrassed that I was circumcised.
Yes, he was circumcised at 8 days old, as according to Jewish custom. But he considers it, quote, a loss for the sake of Christ, who Christ was, by the way, also circumcised at 8 days old and never talked about circumcision, at least as we know from the Gospels.
Right.
Well, yeah, Paul enumerates all these things, these reasons that he has to be confident in the flesh or boast in the flesh, right? Depending on translation. He's like, you guys think you have shit to brag about? Like, I can brag about so many more things than you, but I consider it all loss for Christ.
Yes.
He's so humble.
So humble.
Here are the things I could brag about. Like, Let me give you a detailed list.
The Pauline epistles are like extremely humble braggy.
Yes.
That's like a really defining feature, I feel like.
Absolutely.
He talks a lot about, you know, like, I want to die and be resurrected in heaven. I'm focused on the next life, not this one, except when it comes to your genitalia. That is something you definitely need to think about in this life.
The first intactivist.
We have described him as the first intact.
Right?
Yeah.
He says people who don't believe in Jesus, their destiny is destruction, their God is their stomach, and their glory is their shame.
Mm. You could have a worse God.
Their mind is on earthly things.
Yeah.
I like the idea. I mean, as an atheist, I feel like my stomach does actually dictate a lot of my behavior. I feel like eating tasty food is like a pretty high on the list of motivations for me.
I mean, it really has so many benefits. I mean, it keeps you running for another day.
And like Twizzlers, there's no downside to eating a bag of Twizzlers.
Yeah, sure. Just literally 2 pounds of Twizzlers in a single sitting. Yeah.
And you know, as they said in that pamphlet you got from the city of San Francisco when you got married,
yes,
make sure to get enough folic acid.
Yeah, folic acid.
It's super important.
As far as I remember, Twizzlers are packed with the shit.
Yeah, Twizzlers are like a main source of folic acid.
By the way, congratulations on your marriage.
Oh, thank you.
I thought you were going to say, congratulations on your high folic acid.
I mean,
I don't have those numbers, but I'm very willing to believe that both of you have very high folic acid counts.
You can just tell by the glow in our skin and the sparkle in our eyes that we are rich in folic acid. It's coursing through our gonads.
And then we get to this part where he's talking about the two women. Their names are Euodia and Syntyche.
Now that's a sitcom I've ever heard.
Could be pronouncing those totally wrong. I don't speak any Greek. He tells them to like stop arguing and get along, and he tells everyone to kind of help them.
Stop being so moody. Why don't you try smiling?
Okay, so here's the thing: is like this is clearly not the same person who said that women should not be able to speak in church.
That's right.
He says that they contended at my side in the cause of the gospel.
And he actually had another line in one of the other epistles where he was like, and also remember these women who helped the development of the church.
Yeah.
Here's 10 of them.
So I gotta say, like, I become more and more convinced that Paul didn't actually write that. Hmm. I mean, I know that's like, you know,
academic.
Like a common, a common, like, academic theory. But how could you be like, how can you praise women who have contended at your side and then be like, oh, women should just wait till they get home and ask their husbands
who were there with you in the fourth quarter of the big game.
Yeah.
You know,
they were throwing the Hail Mary pass, literally.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a couple good lines in here that are classics of Sunday school memorization. Of course, we have Rejoice in the Lord Always, and again I say rejoice. You knew this song, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. Rejoice.
Rejoice right, in right, the right. Lord always, and again I say rejoice.
Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice. Rejoice, rejoice, and again I say rejoice. Oh! Yeah, I've totally sang that one in Sunday school.
It's a good one. It has so many different words in it.
It's really cheery.
And then we've got... finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable.
If anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think on these things.
Think about such things about is how my things. NIV renders it.
Well, God damn it. You mean my memory from years ago is off?
My 30-year-old memories are 100% accurate. So basically, like, stay posy.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, think about good stuff. He also has the decency to thank the Philippians for being the only ones to send him money when he was traveling from Macedonia.
But he says, you know, I don't need money, but I got your gift, I was like, this is great because I needed money. But it's not like I needed it. It was just I needed it to live, I'm okay with dying.
That is like a huge, I feel like whenever he gets near the end of these letters, it starts being this weird talk about money where it's like, you know, I'm not asking you to give me money, but it would be great if you would give me money. But like, you know, God will take care of me, but I do need some money. But you don't have to. But like, it would be great if you know.
Like, God has always taken care of me. Here are examples of ways that God has taken care of me.
A church gave me money.
Church gave me money to let me live.
Yeah. I mean, and then there's the standard. God bless us, everyone. Sign out.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget, every knee should bow, every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord.
That's another.
Or, you know, Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through him who strengthens me, or through Christ who gives me strength, depending on your translation.
All just classic. I mean, it's actually it's pretty high concentration of classic Bible verses in here for how short and relatively inconsequential this book is.
I had forgotten how much of Philippians I memorized at various times as a kid. I mean, a lot of these verses are very common memory verses.
This one is relatively context-free, too. So
yeah,
it's a really
true.
Good source for quotes.
That is actually true.
Because you won't end up actually being like, oh, that was the devil that said that.
That is interesting. Yeah, maybe that's part of why this book is so quotable. There's not much of a plot, right? I mean... we don't really know what Eudoia and Syntyche were arguing about.
Wouldn't it be interesting to know what they were arguing about? Probably circumcision.
Love or money. It's got to be love or money, right?
I also appreciate that at this point in my Bible reading quest. Yeah, my career. I can tell like, oh yeah, this is definitely Paul. You know? I always think when I see like biblical scholars talking about, oh, well, you know, this one probably wasn't written by this person. This one probably was like blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like that when we read Ephesians, it was like, oh, this isn't Paul.
Yeah, you can tell.
This one isn't really Paul.
Yeah.
And then this one, it's like, yep, we're back on Paul. This is definitely Paul.
Did you read that this might actually be a compilation of three separate letters, though, that were like, spliced together?
Tell us
but
more.
But most likely from Paul. Well, there's like a couple of really striking breaks, and I wrote them down. Let me find that somewhere in my notes here. So at chapter 3, between verses 1 and 2, this is a very sudden theme change. And the notes in the Bible that I was reading this morning also said chapter 4, between verses 3 and 4, it's a sudden break. But that one didn't seem as sudden to me. But 3, 1 to 2, it is really like is really abrupt. So they think maybe they were separate documents.
What do they say?
Precisely. I didn't write that down.
Oh, okay, hang on.
I don't have a Bible in front of me.
Hang on, I'll read them.
Finally, my brothers and sisters, rejoice in the Lord. To write the same things to you is not troublesome to me, and for you it is a safeguard. 3, 2. Beware of the dogs, beware of the evil workers, beware of those who mutilate the flesh.
Oh, okay. So see, he went into like a circumcision rant.
Yeah, but like totally randomly.
Okay, but Paul does go into a lot of random circumcision
rants. He's a shit sandwich specialist where he starts like, hey.
He starts with the highfalutin stuff about love.
Yeah. We're all saints.
He remembers circumcision, freaks out, then gets himself back on track with the love stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's definitely got an obsessive personality. I mean, that was just suggested in the notes to the Oxford NRSV that it could be a compilation of three separate letters, but most likely, definitely, that doesn't make sense. Most likely of Pauline authorship.
Definitely, maybe.
Most
as
likely
Oasis
of Pauline
said.
authorship. Which, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. There are a lot of common themes that come through in Paul. But it's interesting that, you know, you don't see him as misogynist, because I still like had him in my head as like very misogynistic.
I mean, that's how I think of him generally. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think that I base a lot of that on the, was it 1 Corinthians or 2 Corinthians that had the stuff about women wearing veils and, or women wearing headscarves rather, and then women not being able to talk in church. I think it was 1 Corinthians.
Yeah. And does anyone really dispute that Paul wrote those?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Bart Ehrman. Of all people.
Corinthians.
Well, yes. not that he necessarily didn't write the whole thing, but that it
but
was...
But that could be an interpolation.
That was added later.
Oh, that makes more sense. Because I'm like, wait a minute. I've never heard that Paul didn't write Corinthians.
Yeah, yeah. That the majority of the letter is Paul, but that...
This could be an interpolation.
At some point in the decades before it was like solidified, the final draft in the canon, somebody added that in.
Okay, that's an interesting possibility.
Because like clearly somebody who's like... Who's taking... Euodia and Syntyche seriously and saying like not only that they were like on his level contending with him, you know, but that like,
they were active members in the church, that they had enough
and
they were enough of enough consequence that he would address their conflict specifically.
And his solution is like y'all need to work this out and the community is to help
not
you work
like
it out.
Not like you need to keep your women
not,
in line.
Yeah, not like yeah, shut yeah. up and let your husbands work it out.
Right. And that is more in line, I think, with how the Gospels present women and their relationship to
yes.
Jesus. I mean, there are not any female apostles, of course, but, you know, there are women in pretty important roles,
yes.
right? They discover the empty tomb.
It also is always talking about like, oh yeah, Jesus came and the women
and
were
the
with
women,
him,
yeah.
You know, it doesn't ever like
just like Mr. T and the women.
It rarely names the women. Actually, it'll name a few of the women often.
You want to know something really perverse?
Yeah, always.
Well, it might not be perverse in the sense that you're thinking. It's just that.
Well, that's just getting boring.
I'm kind of sad to give up my view of Paul as a misogynist because I like not liking Paul.
I mean, he's
still an asshole.
There's plenty of stuff not to like.
Yeah.
He's super insecure.
He's very manipulative.
And there's no doubt he's weird about sex.
And he definitely has some phobia around sex. And
because he can't talk about it in any human way.
And definitely, I think there's an inherent misogyny in that.
Yeah, I agree.
Of being like, well, if husband, like, it would be great if husbands and wives just didn't have sex. You know, like, that's... I feel like that's a fear of the female body, just like at a very basic level.
Yeah.
But I also think that, I mean, he does name women in the church in several epistles.
He does.
And that seems to really be at odds with the idea of like women shouldn't speak and they should just ask their husbands.
And
that's a great point.
And he's a strong church boy. Like, the church stuff is what's important to him. So
yeah.
If he's including women in that, then that's pretty much.
And he also says, like, there's, what was it in Galatians that he said, like.
Neither male nor female.
Yeah, neither male nor female.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is like, you know, not, I mean, I wouldn't 100%. It's kind of like.
In Christ, there is neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free,
yes.
male nor female.
So it's not exactly like, it's kind of like being colorblind or whatever. It's not, you know, that's not the approach that I would take to solve sexism, but it's also not like the same as.
It's not a valueless statement.
As like rank misogyny.
Sure.
And there are scholars who have seen that as a radical statement. There's a scholar named Daniel Bayarin who's written a lot of interesting books and articles. He wrote a book about Paul called A Radical Jew.
And I mean, he does radically diverge from some Jewish principles. Circumcision, I don't know.
Well, he looks at Paul as kind of not just sort of the beginning of formal Christianity, but sort of a breaking point for Judaism. But he recognizes Paul is still in Judaism. And these Pauline times, he kind of thinks of Christians as still as a sect of Judaism.
Yeah.
And he uses that verse as a hermeneutic key for him. He finds this as a kind of progressive way to look at Paul. And I think it's an interesting analysis.
I think you can take some parts. Some parts of Paul can be progressive.
He's still annoying.
And he always does tuck in these very beautiful verses about love. But they're always tucked in a bunch of garbage, you know?
Yeah, I mean, what was that whole thing with what I want to do, I do not do, and what I and what I do, I do not want to do.
Yes,
and,
but
remember
I think
that from Romans?
Yes, I think that's, I like that.
I think that was Shakespeare, actually.
It sounds Shakespearean, right? I feel like it describes having OCD, which actually I feel like is very prevalent throughout the Bible, particularly the Old Testament.
I mean, it is kind of relatable, right? But it also shows that this is like a tortured soul, and maybe like we shouldn't listen to everything he says.
Yes, I 100% agree with that. That it's like, I don't understand why this guy's letters are like holy scripture. They're, you know, it's like reading it as this is a person grappling with some issues. Yeah, definitely.
This is a person dealing with like political dissent in an organization. Like he's at his heart, he is like an organizer and like a political leader.
Or like this is a person advancing some new theological innovations, which, you know, may or may not stand up to the test of time.
Sure. And in some cases, building on pre-existing formulae, hymns. So, I mean, there's one of those in Philippians as well. It's chapter 2, verses 6 through 11. It's clearly a formula. The notes in the Bible that I read said it was probably composed in Aramaic. I don't know if you guys want to look at that passage. I did not write down the whole passage. I mean, I don't have a Bible in front of me.
Which one?
Chapter 2, verses 6 through 11.
Yeah, just a second.
My notes said that this would seem to have been a pre-existing hymn, probably composed in Aramaic.
Oh, yeah, because it is, formatted like a hymn.
Mm-hmm. Who, though he was in the form of God, did not regard equality with God as something to be exploited, but emptied himself, taking the form of a slave, being born in human likeness. And being found in human form, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Therefore God also highly exalted him and gave him the name that is above every name, so that at the name of Jesus every knee should bend, in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, and the glory of God the Father.
Yeah.
One very interesting translation difference between the NRSV and the NIV there. I always grew up with the NIV and equality with God as something to be grasped, not exploited.
Yes, that's huge, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped.
That's a huge difference. I don't know what to make of it.
Honestly, these I'm so used to, I majored in English. I have a master's degree in creative writing.
Which you never stop bragging about.
And diction, like choosing a specific word has always been like such a fundamental thing to me about writing in general and reading in general. But then like what I've discovered, especially from doing this podcast where we read different versions of the Bible, is that the words are different, like the translations are different, and the like very precise diction that I would think would be necessary to interpreting the word of God, like you can't do that if you're reading it in English or any language aside from like Greek or Hebrew or Aramaic, you know, depending on.
So, yeah.
Basically, it's impossible to follow Jesus. You simply can't.
How could you follow an act like that?
Well, I do try to. I mean, I've tried to argue, including at my website on my blog, Not Your Mission Field, you know, that there isn't one. I see a lot of people saying that, like, Trump-voting Christians, for example, I know we're not supposed to get too political on this podcast, are fake Christians, right? Mm-hmm. I wrote a whole essay arguing that, no, they're not.
Yes.
They are people who read the Bible in a very specific way. They get certain ideas out of it. You know, they have a practice. They go to church regularly. They do devotionals in the morning. Right? These are Christian communities. The thing is that you can't. There isn't just sort of one magical set of Jesus' teachings that everyone will agree on. And a lot of people really don't like that.
Yes. Across the spectrum. Like, people who aren't Christian want to say, these people aren't Christian. They're not following Jesus.
Right, because they want to think of religion as basically benign, which is very American. You know, I mean, that's a widespread attitude in America. But we have a lot of religious people, certainly not all, you know, who are extremists. And fundamentalism is something that arises in every religious tradition, at least every monotheistic tradition. And it's not something that you can root out.
I'm sure there's Hindu fundamentalists, or say that it's too.
Oh, there totally are. I mean, they engage in violence against Muslims.
Right. So, yeah, I totally agree. I'm in 100% agreement that you can't say, like, that's they're not really Christian.
I think I need to write a follow-up piece called, "Yes, Virginia, there is a right-wing Jesus." Because, you know, Jesus has some hard sayings too. Like, all these people are like, okay, but that there. All these people are like, okay, but that's Paul, or okay, but that's the Old Testament.
Well, Jesus does say no divorce.
Jesus also says that he came not to bring peace but a sword.
Yes.
You know? And he says, let the dead bury their own dead, when he's like, remember, he tells those guys, like, hey, follow me, and they're like, but we're having a funeral, it's really important. And he's like, well, I'm more important than your funeral. You know, or like, whoever does not hate his mother or brother,
yeah,
cannot follow me. Yes, Virginia, there is a fucking right wing Jesus. You know?
Yes, we've talked a lot on this podcast about how the American modern conception of Jesus is like just this really super nice guy who's like infinitely patient, infinitely kind,
basically like the South Park Jesus.
And I am not familiar with the South Park Jesus.
Nico,
and
I bet he's edgy.
I don't care to become acquainted with him. However. There's, like, the Jesus in the Bible, there's some of that, for sure,
mm-hmm.
but there's also other sides to him in the Bible.
It's interesting how the Jesus in the Bible exemplifies both very human traits and very godly traits. Like, he, you know, can basically see the future and is omniscient in a certain kind of way, but he's also, like, very impatient with people
and
their failings.
Doesn't want to suffer, doesn't want to have to suffer the cross.
Yeah, which seems like... Mm-hmm. Those would be opposite things to me. Like, if you could see the path of how everything went, you'd be like, of course, you know.
And if you had, you know, supposedly been around since creation, you would think that, like, these dudes not getting something for, like, a day would not be that
Or that you would have to
frustrating
explain,
you
have to explain something, you know, just twice, not
you,
just...
You could get into some pretty heady stuff that actually is related to Philippians, because, I mean, remember that verse where it says that he emptied himself, right? There's this concept of kenosis in theology, a kind of self-emptying. So Christ did
pretty
not
sure that
have...
was a sin in the Old Testament, if I remember right.
The sin of Onan.
That would be a different kind of self-emptying. That's the one that made me think I had blasphemed the Holy Spirit. No, it really was. Because I promised God I would stop masturbating.
Of course. Every single Christian kid has this problem. Like, honestly. Male, female, like, everyone. Is it time to rate this book?
I think it's time to rate the book. How would you rate this book, my dear?
I am going to give it a 3 out of 5 Mutilators of the Flesh.
Nice.
I
love them. I saw them live and I almost died.
They fucking melted my face off, mm-hmm. bruh. I think that it's kind of, it's kind of like an inoffensive book.
Mm.
It doesn't have a whole lot of substance, but it also doesn't have a whole lot of bullshit. So I'm giving it like a little over half.
I will give it something very similar. I mean, was going to give it 5 out of 9 evil workers.
Nice. Those are the same.
Yeah, I know. for 2 things to beware of,
yeah.
Kids. Mutilators of the Flesh and evil workers.
They're coming for your wangus.
Spiritually.
Yeah. Yeah, for very similar reasons. I feel like it's a very nice encapsulation of Paul's philosophy in just a couple of pages, or at least highlights of it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you don't get the nitty gritty of this and that.
But that's better.
That's what I think as
yeah.
well. It gives him less opportunity to get deep into the weeds on some of this stuff.
Yeah.
Also, when he does write about love, it's quite nice. And the first chapter and a half or so are just instructions about, hey, act more like Christ, be forgiving and be radically generous. And you know what? It's hard to argue against that stuff. Then it gets a little weird.
I mean, I have some like psychological problems with, I don't think you should value others above yourself, because I think that just leads to like resentment.
Mm.
But I do value generosity and selflessness, but you got to also like take care of yourself first. It's like put on your own oxygen mask before you put on your child's.
Right. I can honestly say that it was this kind of stuff in the Bible and when it was emphasized in sermons and that sort of thing that I think really contributed to me, hating myself.
Yeah, I agree.
And thinking that just having a very difficult time even grasping that you not only can love yourself, but you need to love yourself.
Mm. Yes. And like that you should have self-esteem. And in fact, that you can be more generous to others once you have yourself taken care of.
Mm.
But
like I said, you can't argue with
it. Stroopy, what's your rating?
I think I will go with fairly similar. I'll go with 11 out of 22 harvests of righteousness.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. You're giving it a solid 50%, a failing grade.
Well, if you put it that way. I mean, you know, as you said, it is a kind of distillation of Pauline philosophy. It's short, it's quotable. It doesn't have anything really spectacular in it, though. Mm. And, you know, it has a little bit of that annoying Paul being manipulative stuff going on.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's fine. It's short. It doesn't have too much bullshit in it.
Yeah. You know, okay. This sometimes Nico and I like to nitpick apart every song we hear on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you hear a song where it's like not great, but it's real short. Like it gets in and it gets out and it does what it wants to do.
It's got one idea, and the idea is like a C- idea.
But like it gets in, it does it, and it gets out. And yeah. It doesn't like mm-hmm. waste your time. You know, it's yeah. like, here's my idea. We're doing it. Done. And I feel like that's kind of what Philippians is.
Yeah.
It's like a middling radio hit that that knows that, you know, it's got what it's got, and that's all it's got.
But if you've got a C- idea and you think it's an A+, and you treat it that way,
that's like Romans.
And you're like, you're leaning on it, you know, and you're like, why would we have a bridge? Like, why would we ever yeah. go away from this? This yeah. is so solid.
People Do we really need this like 2-minute guitar solo or
it's
whatever?
Like, no, yeah. it should be 6 minutes. You know? And then you lean hard into a C- idea, then it turns into an F song. That's yeah. just how it goes. Mm-hmm. But you can make a C- idea into like a B- song.
Yeah.
Just by...
That's what I think Philippians yeah. is.
Yeah, maybe it should be a little bit higher than half, but you know, it's got many of...
Not much,
no,
though.
You've spoken and you cannot take it back.
Yeah, it's
all right.
It's
I gave it my rating.
Fucking
11
stone
out of 22.
Now.
Yeah, it's got many of the greatest hits as far as the verses go, individual verses.
That's true. It does have a higher concentration yeah. of classic verses. So we have one mailbag letter.
Okay.
Which is we received an email from listener Cheap Fast, which was not spam. But I thought it was gonna be when I received an email from Cheap Fast. And he said he liked our coverage of Apocrypha and wondered if we might do texts like Pilgrim's Progress, another felt board classic. Did you have?
Oh,
the...
absolutely.
Absolutely. or Parts of Paradise Lost. We're looking at doing stuff like that for season 3. We're not really sure what we want to do for that. But listeners, if you have opinions on what we should do for season 3, we'd love to hear them. Contact at sundayschooldropouts.lol.
But that will do it for today's episode of Sunday School Dropouts. Chris, where can people find you online?
You can find me at chrisstroop.com. I've got a blog there called Not Your Mission Field. I write a lot about ex-evangelical and other ex-fundamentalist issues, some criticism of the Christian right. It's got a resources page. It's got a resources page for people coming out of fundamentalist and evangelical backgrounds.
Even just like... mainline Christian backgrounds.
Sometimes
I think it's helpful.
That can be traumatizing too. Yeah. So religious trauma is a real thing. I can be found on Twitter at @C_Stroop. And I also created the hashtag You Don't Know Evangelicals.
You've created a couple of hashtags.
Christian Alt Facts also trended once.
Yes.
Well, maybe more than once. These are kind of used both to help the ex-evangelical community come together and to kind of raise awareness in the wider community of how extremist, the vast majority of white evangelical Protestants are. So I think that's important.
It is.
At this point in time. I've also been a pretty regular contributor to the online religion magazine, Religion Dispatches, and got a couple things on picked up by Salon and Alternet. So yeah, you can find me around on the internet. You can contact me through my website or on Twitter. For building broader ex-fundamentalist community that would include things like people from ultra-Orthodox Judaism or Muslim backgrounds or just any kind of fundamentalist background, we use the hashtag #LeftTheFold.
Oh, nice.
And I do search these hashtags, and I'm happy to interact with people on Twitter, so come say hello.
Awesome. You can follow me on Twitter at Lauren E. O'Neill. I do absolutely nothing of import. I complain about waiting in line.
Her Twitter is awesome. Everybody should follow it.
You can follow the show on Twitter at SunSchoolDrop. You can also find us on Facebook by looking for at SunSchoolDrop or Sunday School Dropouts.
And you can follow Nico on SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/NikoBakulich, NikoBakulich. If SoundCloud still exists, it has music from the show and also music that Nico's doing with his band.
That's correct.
If it still exists.
Yeah, it's a thing. Don't worry about it.
You can also always email us at contact@sundayschooldropouts.lol. Not sundayschooldropouts.com, but sundayschooldropouts.lol.
If you want to help other people find the show and, frankly, pump up our self-esteem a little bit, one of the things that you can do is to leave us a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. You can
whatever
be like,
it's called now. I don't understand.
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
It's a whole thing.
Okay.
You can be like one of the clever, sexy people who left us a review, such as Hyrax232, who described us as fun for sort of Jews.
Or Bitter Melanie, who gave us 12 out of 12 slutty feminist lions.
Or Book Addict 75, who said, we are 10 out of 10 biblical feet.
And also, of course, when we get 100 reviews, Nico has to join Twitter.
Do it.
We're at 75 American ones, and then we have like 6 from Canada and 6 from the UK.
What's the conversion rate?
Wait, they don't count?
Well, it's just that we can't see them, so we have to add them separately. So 75 plus 6 is 81, plus 6 is 87. And then we have at least one in Australia, so that's 88. So we only need 12 more.
Like the disciples.
We need one for each disciple. And then Nico has to join Twitter.
You guys, we have to get Nico on Twitter.
I'm glad that people are really invested in this. If you want us to bless or curse your pets, send them to contact@sundayschooldropouts.lol.
Gotta get those pictures.
You need to see pictures. It's all standard stuff that you've heard on 1,000 podcasts before.
Obvs.
Anyway, I want to thank Chris again for being on the show tonight.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be with you.
Besides that, my name is Nico.
I'm Lauren.
And we will see you on Sunday.
Bye.
Bye.